Imagine you hire this army of the world's fastest builders. Like you give them a vague blueprint, you go out for a quick cup of coffee, and when you come back an hour later, they've constructed this sprawling, breathtaking 50-room mansion right on your property.
Which sounds amazing, right?
Right. But the only problem is, they didn't build any hallways. There are no doors connecting the rooms, so you have this massive, beautiful structure and absolutely no way to navigate it.
Yeah, you just can't get around.
Exactly. And that scenario is no longer just some weird thought experiment. It's like exactly what we are looking at today. We're exploring what happens when artificial intelligence allows a single developer to scale their content so incredibly fast that the actual structural foundation of their app literally breaks under the weight of its own success.
It's really the defining paradox of modern software development right now. I mean, the tools we have completely remove the friction of creating the content itself.
Which is wild.
It is wild, but it means the new friction point instantly shifts to information architecture. You can generate a million things in an hour, but how do your users actually find any of them?
And that is our mission for today's deep dive. We are looking at this really fascinating developer blog post from the Building Elon series. It's titled From 18 to 68, When Your Catalog Outgrows Its Navigation. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Because the premise is just brilliant. You have a solo developer sitting down for like a completely routine Tuesday. They've blocked out the morning for boring bug fixing. And by the afternoon, they accidentally trigger this massive app altering expansion.
Yeah, but before we get to the AI magic, we really have to talk about that morning. They had to, clear the deck,
Clear the deck,
which
right?
is a crucial part of the story. Because if you are going to summon a literal flood of new content, your plumbing better be absolutely watertight.
Yeah.
So the developers started their day staring down a backlog of five specific bugs.
Five of them, yeah.
Just these invisible drains that completely ruin a user experience if you leave them unchecked.
Invisible drains is like the perfect way to put it. So the first one was a redundant server sent events issue, or SSE.
Right.
And if you think of a server connection like an open water pipe, the server was already doing all the heavy lifting of generating captions and sending them down the pipe. And the mobile version of the app was catching that water just fine.
But the web client wasn't.
Exactly. The web client was completely ignoring the server's work and just deciding to generate its own captions from scratch.
And in the current landscape, I mean, computational work directly translates to API credits.
Yeah.
And API credits are essentially the gasoline of generative AI.
Yeah, you pay for every drop.
You do. So if your web client is duplicating work the server already finished, you are literally setting money on fire in the background. Stopping that leak was step one.
Which immediately leads into the second invisible drain. And this one had to do with Gemini, the AI model driving the app. The developer realized that Gemini actually has two completely separate paths for blocking content.
Yeah, this is a huge one.
And they had walked right into this classic integration trap by only checking one of those paths.
This happens like all the time when people integrate these massive language models. Because when you send a prompt to Gemini, the system first evaluates the text of your prompt.
Right.
If it detects a policy violation, say you're asking for something inappropriate, it blocks it immediately. It throws an error flag right at the starting line. And the developer was checking for that specific flag.
But there's a second hurdle, right?
Precisely. So if the prompt is totally fine, Gemini starts generating the response. But let's say halfway through creating that response, the output itself suddenly triggers a safety filter.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the AI just stops. But it throws a completely different kind of error. It flags a finish reason set to safety.
And because the developer wasn't checking that mid-generation flag, the app was just silently swallowing the failure.
It just fails silently.
Which is terrible. If you're a user, you type something in, hit enter, and just get this empty void staring back at you.
No error message, nothing.
No, please try again. Just a broken interface. So they patch that. But then we get to an issue that, honestly, anyone listening to this on a smartphone will appreciate: image compression.
Oh, yeah. Because
Yeah.
Gemini defaults to outputting PNG files, which are uncompressed. And I mean, they're visually pristine.
Visually pristine, but incredibly heavy. We are talking 3 to 5 megabytes for a single image.
It's massive for mobile.
Yeah. If you've ever been on a crowded train with a spotty 4G connection trying to load a gallery that's 30 megabytes, you know that feels like an absolute eternity.
So the developer's solution here was to intercept those massive PNGs on the server side before the user ever even sees them. They implemented a tool called Sharp to instantly convert those files into highly compressed JPEGs or WebP formats.
Shrinking them down a ton.
Yeah, shrinking them down to well under a megabyte. And to the naked eye on a mobile screen, the quality difference is negligible. But the load time becomes almost instantaneous.
Which is going to be incredibly important for the scale they hit later in the day. Now let's look at the fourth bug, because it's a bit technical, but I want to make sure I'm wrapping my head around it. It's a Zustand stale closure bug in React.
Right, the stale closure.
The developer noted that this particular piece of code worked perfectly 95% of the time, and then just failed inscrutably the other 5%.
Stale closures are pretty much the bane of a React developer's existence. The easiest way to understand it is imagine making a major investment decision today, but the only information you're allowed to use is a newspaper stock ticker from 1998.
Oh, wow. So you're acting on ancient history.
Exactly. In this app, a piece of code, in effect, took a snapshot of the app's state. It memorized where the user was and what they were doing. But by the time that specific code actually executed its logic, a few moments later, the user had clicked something else.
They moved on.
The app had moved on. So the code was operating on that 1998 newspaper. The fix is a command called getState, which essentially forces the code to put down the old newspaper and look at the live market data right at the exact millisecond it runs.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And it brings us to the final bug of the morning, which I just find hilarious.
But Jeff.
Yes. The developer describes WeChat's in-app browser as a special circle of web development hell.
Which is very accurate.
It completely breaks modern features. It runs a bizarre, outdated JavaScript engine. And their brilliant technical solution, they didn't even fix it.
They absolutely refused to fix it.
They just built a hard block, a pop-up modal that essentially says, hey, we see you're using WeChat. Please copy this link and go open it in Safari or Chrome.
Yep.
Let me push back on this a bit, though, because it feels a little like playing a video game, getting to a ridiculously hard boss and just choosing to walk around it. Like, is that actually good engineering practice, or is it just lazy?
It's ruthless pragmatism.
Yeah.
And it's a critical skill. I mean, fighting that boss spending weeks trying to force a cutting-edge AI app to work perfectly inside a hostile legacy browser would have required building a very fragile compatibility layer.
And then you're stuck with it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Once you build that layer, you have to maintain it forever. It becomes a permanent tax on your time. Sometimes, the most sophisticated technical decision you can make is to explicitly choose not to support a bad environment.
Just gracefully usher the user to a better one.
Yeah, and protect your own engineering bandwidth.
Cut your losses so you can actually build the product.
Precisely. And notice what happens next. By midday, because they cleared that technical debt so decisively, the foundation was rock solid. The plumbing was ready.
And right on cue, the floodgates open. A user request comes in just saying, can you add travel destination cards to the Elon app?
A seemingly innocent request.
Seemingly, but it implies an astronomical amount of manual labor. Because the user is asking for coverage of 7 major travel regions, Japan, Europe, Southeast Asia, domestic China, to do this manually, a designer would have to define multiple scenes for each region.
Every single one.
Yeah. Every scene needs a muse card, which dictates the outfit, the pose, the specific lighting, the camera angle. You're staring down the barrel of manually designing over 40 distinct cards.
Which is where the AI leverage just completely flips the script. Instead of opening up a design tool, the developer spun up 4 parallel AI research agents to act as digital scouts.
I am obsessed with this concept. They basically deputized 4 AI models, handed them clipboards, and sent them out into these regions.
That's a great way to picture it.
One scouts Europe, one scouts Japan, and so on. But they didn't just ask for a list of pretty places. The developer gave the agents a specific constraint. They had to evaluate the scenes and assign them an AI feasibility score from 1 to 10.
That constraint is the secret sauce. Because the developer isn't just asking what looks good in real life. They're asking the AI to self-assess its own rendering limitations.
Like, what can you actually draw?
Yeah, they're asking what can current generation models actually draw without messing up.
And the results were like a masterclass in understanding how generative AI actually sees the world. The successes were entirely based on clean geometry.
Geometry is key.
Natural landscapes scored incredibly high. Yunnan rice terraces, alpine lakes, lavender fields.
Because nature is very forgiving to an AI. A tree branch can be slightly out of place, and our brain just accepts it as a tree.
Same with iconic, simple architecture. A torii gate in Japan or the white and blue domes of Santorini, they have a really strong, unambiguous visual identity.
But the failures.
Yeah, tell me about the failures.
The agents warned the developer to stay far away from dense text and signage. Places like Shibuya Crossing in Tokyo or the neon-drenched streets of Hong Kong scored terribly.
And if you understand the mechanism of how AI generates images, you know exactly why. And AI doesn't, like, know how to read letters.
No, not at all.
It just understands the statistical shapes of lines. So when you ask it to render a neon sign in Hong Kong, it draws things that have the rough geometric shape of Chinese characters. But when you look closely, it's just alien gibberish.
It instantly breaks the immersion.
Totally. The scouts also flag crowds as a massive failure point. Temple festivals, bustling night markets.
Crowds are a nightmare for AI. They require rendering dozens of distinct human faces, varied body postures, and complex overlapping limbs in the background. The AI almost always slips into the uncanny valley there.
Yeah, you end up with people facing the wrong way or extra fingers.
And it gets creepy fast.
Yeah.
So trusting the scouts, the developer filtered out all the low-scoring concepts and kept 37 pristine scenes that scored a 7 or higher.
And just like that, the total content of the Elon app jumped from 31 cards to 68 cards.
In a matter of hours.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because if you told a developer 10 years ago that they could safely double the size of their app's core content in a single afternoon while drinking a coffee, they would think you were describing paradise.
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds like an absolute victory. So why did this sudden expansion actually create a crisis?
Because of the mansion without hallways. You have completely solved the content bottleneck. You have more high-quality scenes than you know what to do with, but you instantly hit a structural bottleneck.
The navigation.
Exactly. The app originally had a very elegant, simple, four-category tab system.
Right. Tabs like Wanderlust and City Drift.
That taxonomy works beautifully when you have 30 items to sort through. But dump nearly 70 items into those four buckets, and the user interface becomes a chaotic, unscrollable mess. The structure just broke.
So the developer's first instinct to fix the structure was honestly the most obvious one. If the user asked for new geography, organize the new tabs by geography. Just make a Japan tab, a Europe tab, a Southeast Asia tab.
It seems entirely logical. Just match the navigation to the content.
But within minutes, they realized geography was a fatal trap for the user experience. First of all, it creates a massive imbalance. A domestic China tab would be bursting with 12 different cards, but a Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan tab would only have 3.
It creates a ghost town effect. As a user, you click a top-level navigation tab, expect a rich experience, and you're staring at 3 lonely pictures.
Yeah, it makes the app feel empty, even though it's literally just doubled in size.
And beyond the ghost towns, organizing by map fragments the aesthetic experience. Think about it. If you want to look at beach resorts, where do you go?
Right.
You have a gorgeous beach in Bali, one in Sanya, one in Phuket. They are functionally the exact same aesthetic vibe. But if your app is organized by borders, the user has to bounce in and out of 3 completely different region tabs just to compare their beach options.
Which highlights the most profound realization of the developer's day. When human beings open an inspiration app, they do not browse map first. They browse mood first.
That's so true.
It's like having a massive vinyl record collection. Organizing these beautiful atmospheric photo cards strictly by geography is like rigidly alphabetizing your record collection by the bass player's last name.
That's a great analogy.
It might be factually accurate, but it isn't entirely useless for how you actually consume the media. What you really want is to pull a record based on how you want to feel on a rainy Sunday morning or, you know, what you want playing during a lively dinner party.
That mental model is everything. A map-first navigation works perfectly if you are building Expedia or an airline booking app where the primary hard constraint is physical location.
You literally need to know where you're flying.
Exactly. But for Elon, the goal is aspirational aesthetics.
So the developer threw out the map and pivoted to a 2-axis system, which, astonishingly, they architected in just 90 minutes.
90 minutes is incredibly fast.
The primary axis is all about that mood. They built 6 new vibe tabs based entirely on emotional register. You have vacation and relaxation for the beaches, secret nature for the mountains, urban light and shadow, cultural experience, refined living, and seasonal specials.
That completely solves the emotional browsing.
Mm.
And for the secondary axis, they introduced optional region chips. little visual overlays like a Japanese flag or a European flag sitting right inside the vibe tabs.
So you can sit in the vacation tab, soak in all the global beach vibes side by side. But if you suddenly decide you only care about Japan, you tap the Japan chip and it instantly filters the vibe.
The taxonomy is saved.
Yes. The old cards organically absorbed into this new emotional structure seamlessly.
The architecture is finally robust enough to hold the mansion, but, and this is a massive but, they still hadn't actually generated the final visual assets for those 37 new cards.
Oh, right. We've just been talking about the scaffolding. Now they actually have to pour the concrete. And the scale of what happens next absolutely melts my brain.
It's intense.
In one single afternoon session, this solo developer needs to produce 37 complex code definitions, 37 distinct cover images, and 444 sample images.
This is what industrial scale creation looks like when wielded by an individual.
Let's break down the execution, starting with the card definitions. Yeah. Because these aren't just descriptions, it's structured data. Scene configurations, specific prompts, pose weights. It amounted to roughly 7,000 lines of JSON code.
Which is a lot.
A ton. They unleashed their parallel AI agents to write it all. But they hit a hard physical limit of the AI itself.
Yeah, one of the agents suddenly choked and failed mid-generation because it hit its token limit.
No, wait, hold on. Let me make sure I understand this token limit thing. That's essentially the AI running out of short-term memory, right?
That's a great way to visualize it. Think of the context window as an actor trying to memorize a script while currently performing on stage. If you give them a 5-page scene, they can hold it all in their head and perform flawlessly. But if you suddenly hand them a 400-page manuscript and demand they memorize and recite it all in one breath, their brain simply drops the information.
They suffocate.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The agent was trying to hold 11 incredibly complex technical card definitions in its working memory simultaneously. It ran out of breath.
So the developer had to step in and orchestrate. They split that overloaded agent into two sub-agents, handling just 5 or 6 cards each, keeping them safely under the memory ceiling.
Definitions done.
Next task, the 37 cover images.
And this is where the morning's bug fixing pays massive dividends.
Yes, because they were using Gemini to generate these covers, which we know spits out those massive data-heavy PNG files.
Those are the 3 to 5 megabyte ones.
Exactly. But because the developer had already built that sharp compression pipeline hours earlier to fix the PEC debt, the system automatically caught those 37 heavy covers, batch converted them to WebP format, and shrunk them by 13 times.
It just ran perfectly in the background.
So when the user opens that gorgeous new mood-based taxonomy, the grid loads instantly.
The plumbing held the flood. Which brings us to the final, most demanding task. The sample images.
444 total images. Because every single one of the 37 cards needs a variety of examples. A clean studio shot, a casual selfie angle, a grainy Polaroid-style film shot. Generating that many images in a couple of hours introduces a notoriously difficult AI quirk called face drift.
Face drift is a really fascinating phenomenon. When you ask an AI model to repeatedly generate images based on a single reference photo of a user, especially across wildly different lighting conditions and poses, the AI plays a subtle game of telephone with the facial features.
Oh, interesting.
Over successive generations, it slowly loses the exact likeness. The output starts to drift. The jawline changes slightly, the eyes shift. Suddenly, it doesn't look like the user anymore. It looks like their cousin or just a total stranger.
And if you're building an app where the entire value proposition is the user seeing themselves in these aspirational travel spots, face drift completely shatters the illusion.
It ruins the product.
But you obviously cannot have a human being sit at a desk and manually inspect the jawlines of 444 images in an afternoon.
It would take days.
Yeah.
So what do? You automate the taste testing, you build an automated quality control pipeline.
AI judging AI.
Precisely. The developer rigged Gemini Flash to act as a bouncer. Every single time a sample image was rendered, before it was saved, Gemini Flash would compare it directly against the original reference photo and assign it a similarity score from 1 to 10.
Wow.
The developer set a hard rule. Anything that scores under a 7 is instantly rejected, deleted, and sent back to the rendering queue to be regenerated automatically.
And the pass rate was staggering. The first round had a 95.2% success rate. Only a tiny fraction got flagged by the bouncer. And after the automated regeneration, the entire batch of 444 images was practically flawless.
It's a huge win.
So what does this all mean? The developer refers to this as the super individual thesis, this reality where one person acts as the creative director, the coding team, the design studio, and the QA department simultaneously. But I have to push back here.
Sure.
Because when I hear this story, it sounds like the AI wrote the code, the AI scouted the locations, the AI generated the images, and the AI even quality controlled itself. Doesn't this make the human developer completely irrelevant? Aren't they just pushing a go button?
It's the most common fear in tech right now. But this specific day in the life of the Elon developer proves the exact opposite. The AI absolutely dominates the execution.
Okay.
But the true bottleneck in this entire narrative was never the typing or the drawing or the rendering. The bottleneck was entirely about decision making.
I see where you're going with this, the human element.
The human element is now completely distilled down to taste, judgment, and orchestration. I mean, the AI didn't inherently know that Shibuya Crossing would look like alien gibberish. The human had to evaluate the feasibility scores and make the editorial choice to cut it.
Right, they had to interpret the data.
The AI didn't realize that organizing by a map was a terrible user experience. The human had to empathize with the user's mental model and invent the mood-first taxonomy. The human decided what the bouncer's threshold should be for face drift, deciding what to build, how to organize it, and what standard of quality to uphold. That is the work now. The execution simply scales to infinity.
So the developer is no longer the bricklayer. They are the architect and the city planner rolled into one.
Exactly. And that is the core meta lesson of this entire deep dive. Adding almost four times the amount of content to the app was physically the easiest part of the developer's day. The actual hard work was rethinking the browse experience so it didn't collapse.
Yeah, building the hallways for the mansion.
We have definitively crossed into an era where the sheer velocity of AI content creation dramatically outpaces the speed of human information architecture.
Which brings it all back to that mansion without hallways. And if you're listening to this, whether you are building software, running a small business, managing a team, or just trying to organize your own massive digital life, this is the exact dynamic you are going to face.
Absolutely.
The primary risk going forward is no longer a lack of information or a lack of content.
Content is effectively infinite now. It's commoditized.
The real risk is decision fatigue and structural collapse. This developer's sudden content expansion forced a navigation redesign that ultimately made the whole app significantly better. The structure had to evolve rapidly just to survive the scale.
It really forces us to completely reevaluate what skills are actually valuable in a marketplace of infinite execution.
Which leaves me with a final thought for you to mull over as you look at your own projects. If AI can instantly generate any content, any code, any image we ask for, and our only real job becomes curating, organizing, and orchestrating it, will the most sought-after, highest-paying job skill of the future simply be having remarkably good taste?
It might just be the one thing you can't automate.
Until next time, keep exploring.